Welcome, everyone, to the Ready for the Draft podcast. I am your host, Greg Schutz. This is episode 24 of the 2024 podcast series, where we take a look at the draft-eligible prospects and get you ready for the NFL draft. And we are now just a little over 3 weeks away from the start of the NFL draft, Thursday, April 25th. I can't wait to go ahead and get all of this together. There's still a lot to cover before we get there. And really, the next set of podcasts episodes really are going to be revolving around by the numbers, taking a look at each of the positions and really taking a look at how these positions have played out over the last few drafts. So we'll look at really not only the five-year average, but even the three-year average, because a lot has changed over the last 3 years. A lot of moving parts there, you know, GMs, head coaches, a lot of different situations, right? So we'll start with the quarterbacks. We'll move our way through the offense. We'll also take a look at the defensive side of the football as well, and really talk through each of these positions and where we see a lot of these guys falling in the draft. So let's go ahead and jump right into the quarterback position. So when you look at quarterbacks over the last 5 years, you're looking at about, what, just under 11 and a half on average. So you're talking about right around 11. And the three-year average is right at 11 quarterbacks. So you look at it, obviously, 2023, we have 14 quarterbacks taken. So we know that we had the three quarterbacks taken in round number one with Will Levis and Hendon Hooker finishing out day two of the draft. So the first 2 days, five quarterbacks taken. And then we saw quite a run on quarterbacks, especially in the fifth round, where we had four quarterbacks taken just in that round alone, before we finally rounded things out with Tanner McKee and Max Duggan in the sixth and seventh rounds. So 14, that's the most that we've had in the last 5 years. Before that, though, I think the teams were hungry for quarterbacks, because you looked at the 2022 season, we only had nine quarterbacks taken, just the one in round number one, Kenny Pickett, who's already moved on to Philadelphia. You look at, you know, really just a down year overall for quarterbacks. Desmond Ridder, Malik Willis, the only, and Matt Corral, only three quarterbacks taken in round number three. We know the situation there. Ridder moved on from the Falcons already. You know, Willis, Corral, you know, just never really have solidified any type of a holding there. Bailey Zappe, hey, look, you know, fourth rounder, kind of overlooked, but you know, actually was a nice spot starter there for the Patriots. Sam Howell moved on. Now he's the backup there in Seattle. You know, and then a trio there, round number seven, Chris Oladokun, Skylar Thompson, taken ahead of Brock Purdy. Mr. Irrelevant, number 262 overall, 41st pick in round number seven out of Iowa State. Now, you know, I think teams are still, you know, it's a copycat league. I think teams will be looking for that. Who's the next Brock Purdy? We'll talk about that in this year's draft class. Is there somebody in the draft class that could be that Brock Purdy? You know, you look at 2021, you know, only 10 quarterbacks taken there. This was where we actually saw five quarterbacks taken in the first 15 picks. So unprecedented. Never had seen that. You look at it, though, you know, we're bound to see quarterbacks, you know, a bunch of busts, you know, in round one, unfortunately. I mean, it's just kind of the way the deck is stacked. We'll get to 2020 in a second, which almost feels like an anomaly at this point. Trevor Lawrence, look, you know, we knew that he was going to be the starter there at Jacksonville and have good success. Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, 2 and 3. Justin Fields, number 11. We know what's happened there. Lance on his way to call to the Cowboys, traded there. Zach Wilson on his way out there with the Jets. Justin Fields traded to the Steelers. Four picks later, Mac Jones also traded. Now he's backing up Trevor Lawrence, who went 14 picks ahead of him at number one overall. Kyle Trask, you know, look, he was given a shot. Ultimately, Baker Mayfield is the quarterback there in Tampa. Kellen Mond, look, the Vikings are going to be looking for a quarterback. Kellen Mond is not the answer. Davis Mills, Ian Book, and Sam Ehlinger kind of rounded things out. Sam Ehlinger, actually the quarterback of that group down there at the end, that actually had the most success, actually got to see some time as a starter. You know, but 2020, this was the draft. Man, you know, there was a weird run in the seventh round with a bunch of quarterbacks. that we'll get to here in a sec. But you look at Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, Jordan Love, all four are franchise quarterbacks. Then you look at number five, the only other quarterback taken on the first 2 days of the draft, and that's Jalen Hurts, number 53 overall, to the Philadelphia Eagles. We know what Jalen Hurts has meant to Philly. After that, it's, you know, really a who's who of trivia questions. You know, from Jacob Eason, who everyone thought was going to go off the board on day two, fall into day three. James Morgan, Jake Fromm, Jake Luton, and then, as I mentioned, the guys in round number seven, Cole McDonald, Ben DiNucci, Tommy Stevens, Nate Stanley. Here's one of the things with the draft as you look at this. You know, I mentioned guys like Chris Oladokun, Skylar Thompson. You know, I didn't mention last year's draft. We really want to kind of talk about some of the guys there, but Sean Clifford, Tanner McKee, Max Duggan, guys that I think during the draft process, we looked at those guys and said, are they really going to get drafted? You know, are these guys that, you know, I mean, you know, Tommy Stevens, more of a running quarterback, Nate Stanley at Iowa, you know, did we really see them getting drafted? And ultimately, it's one of those things where most years, teams will take a flyer on some of these guys, and so we end up with more quarterbacks taken than we might have expected. I think there's a lot of talk with this year's draft class that, hey, you know, we may not even get to 10. You know, that we may only have 8 or 9 quarterbacks drafted. I think it's a stronger draft class than that. We'll see. You know, it's stronger than the 2022 class. So we'll see at least 11, but I think we can make an argument for as many as 12 or 13 in this year's draft class. 2019, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones still on their teams. There's the unfortunate circumstances around the late Dwayne Haskins. Really never got a chance to get his career started. Drew Lock, has been a solid backup. Now he's backing up Daniel Jones, who coincidentally was taken 36 picks earlier than him. Will Greer, on to yet another team. We've seen Ryan Finley get a little bit of playing time there with the Bengals. Jared Stidham, actually looking like he may be the starter in Denver, at least to start the season. Easton Stick re-signed again as a backup there in San Diego. Gardner Minshew, there's a name. There's a guy who's been that bridge quarterback. Taken in the sixth round, 178 overall by the Jaguars. Had a decent season, I guess you could say, with the Colts. You know, I think, you know, better than expected, especially with Anthony Richardson going down with a shoulder injury. Now he's the bridge quarterback there once again in Las Vegas. We're expected to take a quarterback as well. So when you look at the group and you look at everything, how everything plays out, you know, the narrative and what you're looking at initially, the guys that are at the top of the draft, it doesn't always pan out for them. Some of those guys on day three end up stepping up and having solid careers. Well, this past season, let's take a look at this real quick before we get into this year's draft class. So Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, 1 and 2, and then Anthony Richardson, number 4 overall. There's a lot of smoke about, hey, CJ Stroud may fall, maybe the fourth quarterback taken, not really sure where he's going to go. Will Levis, thought to be a first rounder, no brainer, ends up falling all the way to number 33 overall, was the second pick in round number 2. Hendon Hooker, was battling the injury, going to the Lions in round number 3. So those were the only quarterbacks, just 5 quarterbacks taken in the first 2 days of the draft. Jake Haener as a backup in New Orleans. Stetson Bennett with the Rams. Looks like he's back. Aiden O'Connell, he filled in admirably after Jimmy Garoppolo went down to injury. Doesn't look like he's ready to be a starter. Clayton Tune got a spot start with the Cardinals, as did Dorian Thompson-Robinson with the Browns. They were 5th-round picks, as was, like I said, Sean Clifford, who's still there on the roster as a backup with the Packers. Jaren Hall. Kellen Mond was just taken 2 years prior. That didn't work out. They go with Jaren Hall. Now Jaren Hall, they're looking at it again. Hey, we need a quarterback of the future. Kirk Cousins moved on to Atlanta. Minnesota's looking to trade up and get their quarterback that they want. So, Jaren Hall, not a pick that worked out. Tanner McKee, really more of a developmental guy there in round 6, didn't pan out. Max Duggan, number 239 overall, really a gritty, gutty guy, but the arm strength was really lacking there. Some of the decision making at times as well. It's interesting. You look at the draft, and you look at, we talk about round number one, and you know, outside of 2022, which was the anomaly, we saw at least three quarterbacks taken in round one. Now, obviously, 2021, we saw five quarterbacks taken in the first 15 picks. Will we see six quarterbacks taken this year? There's a chance. A lot of people are mocking it. I don't know that makes a whole lot of sense. We've got four quarterbacks that I think we know for sure. You know, that would match what we saw in 2020, which we saw four franchise quarterbacks taken in that group. So when we look at this, you know, we know that Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, those are the four quarterbacks that we know for sure going off the board in round number one, right? After that, you've got Michael Penix Jr., who, when you look at the arm strength, you know, the deep ball accuracy is second to none. You know, best in this class. I think you can make that argument that he's better than any of these quarterbacks with that deep ball accuracy, being able to drop the ball in the bucket, on a line. I know you're going to say, well, Jaden Daniels can do it, but, man, Michael Penix Jr., it was just time and time and time again. The ability, you know, there's just his arm strength is different. But the thing is the injuries. Four straight years. Can a team justify taking him in round number one? I honestly think that if a team trades down or possibly looks to trade back into round one, that's where Michael Penix Jr. can come off the board. Bo Nix is the other guy. So you look at Bo Nix and his story, you know, the thing with it is he's very efficient in the short to intermediate routes, really comfortable in Oregon's offense. What could he do at the NFL level? You know, the arm strength to the deep, you know, deep ball. A lot of times, you know, when he's throwing the ball right down the middle of the field, tremendous accuracy. If you're asking him to throw outside the numbers, that's where I think his arm strength really starts to suffer. And you know, when you watch him on the move, when he gets under pressure, if he makes that pre-snap read and knows where a blitz is coming, a hot read, he knows exactly where to go with the football. But you get pressure on him, especially when you get pressure on him late, that's where he could struggle, especially when he's asked to move and he's improvising. That arm strength and the playmaking ability, it doesn't always work out for him. So that's really the big question mark is he a true one or is he a backup? There are some scouts that say that he may be a backup. You can't take a backup in round number one. But it only takes one team that looks at him and says, he's our franchise quarterback. We're going to go up and get him for that to happen and have him come off the board in round one. I just don't know that it's going to happen. If anybody of those two, I think Michael Penix Jr. is the one that a team will trade up for there in round number one, which then means Bo Nix would likely be a round two guy. And when you look at the draft, what's interesting is outside of 2022, we know that quarterback class, we've already talked about it, every other season, you know, every other draft in the last 5 years, we've had just one quarterback taken in round number two in each of those drafts. So just like 2021, it could be conceivable that we see Williams, Daniels, McCarthy, May, and Penix coming off the board, and then Nix comes off the board in round number two. Now, following that up, here's where the question marks come, right? So in round three, over the last 3 years, you know, we've averaged two quarterbacks coming off the board in round number three. Main exception over the last 3 years has been 2023, where we saw just the one quarterback, Hendon Hooker, coming off the board. I look at this draft, I think Spencer Rattler is a shoo-in to be a day two pick. The arm strength, his ability, he makes it look so easy. And I think his development year over year, developmental prospect, a guy that, you know, you get him in with the team with a veteran, allow him to develop. I think this is a guy that, could end up being a starter at the next level. Michael Pratt of Tulane, Jordan Travis of Florida State, Joe Milton of Tennessee. Those are really the next quarterbacks in line. Is there a team that's going to be interested in any of these guys? In round number three, I don't know that a team is going to make a gamble, because you're talking about some developmental guys here at this point. Michael Pratt, consistency is his biggest thing, biggest issue. He's got some good athleticism. Decision-making, not always on point. Jordan Travis, I think he's limited with the arm strength, but his game is all about that mobility, his ability to escape the pocket, his ability to make plays, keeping those eyes down the field. when he's on the move. He was kind of like a Caleb Williams light while he was playing there at Florida State. He goes down to the leg injury. I think teams really want to see, you know, what's the prognosis there? What are the things that medical is really going to be key for him? And that's going to be a big question mark. Where does Jordan Travis end up coming off the board? Then there's Joe Milton. Joe Milton III, 6'5", 235. You know, this is a guy that is a freakish athlete. You know, I think there are some comparisons to Anthony Richardson. He's not as fast as Anthony Richardson. I don't think he's quite that athlete, but he's got a much better arm. He's got some incredible arm talent. His ability, you know, if you watch him at the combine, he drops back and kind of waits before he finally uncorks a 70-plus yard pass down the field. Just effortless with just a flick of the wrist. And but the thing is he's mostly one speed. You don't see him dialing back on that velocity. You really, you know, it's all or nothing with him. Decision making and accuracy issues there. The touch, as I mentioned. But he's a developmental guy and someone that I think I could absolutely see teams taking a flyer on him. Is he a round five, round six? Developmentally, you know, we look at the draft class last year, and there wasn't a guy in the draft class that had the arm strength on day three that Joe Milton has. So that's why I think teams could end up looking at him as early as round four, possibly. But I think more than likely it makes sense. You know, his actual value would be probably in that fifth to sixth round range. So, you know, if you're scoring at home, you know, Travis is that big question mark in that group. So I've got 9, possibly 10 with Jordan Travis. So when we look at the rounds themselves, you know, round three, I mentioned, 1.4 over the last 5 years. We didn't have any in 2020. That, again, was the year that we had all the franchise quarterbacks taken in the first 5 picks. Quarterback picks, you know, we saw that through Jalen Hurts there with number 53 overall, you know, 5 quarterbacks taken there. Didn't see another quarterback taken until pick 122 when Eason came off the board. So do we have another quarterback? I don't think so. I don't think there is another one. So then you look at the fourth round. Okay, fourth round, what do we have? Well, last 3 years, we saw just one coming off the board in round four. 2021, 2022. In 2023, we saw 3. Jay Kaner, Stetson Bennett, Aiden O'Connell. Made perfect sense. I think that was really where a lot of people had those guys mocked. I think Michael Pratt, again, makes a lot of sense. But, man, I don't know that there's another guy that you want to take a chance on there. You know, you get to round 5, and you know, you're right around between 1 and 2 as an average. You know, for the last 3 years, and then last, even expanding it out to the last 5 years. You know, we saw 2 come off the board in round 5 in 2019. That was Easton Stick, Clayton Thorson. So, you know, you're starting to get into that type of caliber of quarterback. Jake Fromm in 2020, 2021. You know, we didn't see any quarterbacks in round 5. Sam Howell in 2022. Again, intriguing. Toon, DTR, Clifford, Jaren Hall this past season. So when you look at that, obviously there were a lot of quarterbacks that I think teams were more sure of. I look at this group, Joe Milton makes a lot of sense, maybe Jordan Travis, but really I've kind of been leaving the last 4 that really, you know, they're question marks, right? So you look at a guy like Devin Leary out of Kentucky. So Devin Leary, look, when he started at NC State, this was a guy before the injury that he had. This was a guy that I felt pretty comfortable as a day 3 pick, right? 62 touchdowns, just 16 interceptions, but suddenly he gets to Kentucky, and I don't know if it was the SEC play. Man, you know, you look at it, under 60% completion percentage, you know, 56.3. 25 touchdowns to 12 interceptions. You know, I mean, he threw 12 interceptions, which is more than he had in 2020 through 2022 with the Wolfpack. You know, the last 3 years there. So really, really confusing, and that's one of the things that makes you pause. But I think, you know, he's a playmaker. you know, and you saw that there with the Wolfpack. So I think teams looking at the entire body of work, you know, again, medicals could be an issue there with Devin Leary, but I think teams may be interested in taking a flyer on him. Then you look at a guy like Sam Hartman. Sam Hartman out of Notre Dame, right? Another guy, you know, not the biggest quarterback. You know, Leary, 6'1", 215. Sam Hartman, 6'1", 211. Again, both quarterbacks, not the biggest guys by any means, but what you had with Sam Hartman was a guy that was a tremendous leader there for Wake Forest. I think he does more with the intangibles than he does with the athleticism, the arm strength. You look at him, you know, just an average arm. I think the arm got him into trouble with a lot of his decision making. I thought that he forced the ball in way too often. But look, you know, one of the things that made him successful there with Dave Clawson and the Demon Deacons was, you know, he was able to throw that deep ball with regularity, and hit those targets down the field, especially A.T. Perry. And you know, I thought he continued to improve that completion percentage each and every year. You know, his last year there at Wake Forest, over 63%. You know, Wake Forest, you know, in his career was 59.1. Best completion percentage with Notre Dame at 63.5. But interceptions, huge issue. 41 picks at Wake Forest, 49 total in his career. You know, so even though he had the 134 touchdowns, you still look at all those interceptions, the decision making, forcing the ball. I think he trusted his arm a little bit too much, and that got him into trouble. You know, he looked to make a throw, and rather than, you know what, let's be realistic with being able to complete the passes, he's more about throwing his receivers open, playing with better anticipation. You know, if he's off that first read and he's having to survey the field, if he gets pressured, he doesn't do well. He gets that pressure in his face. He, you know, if he's fading back or if he's moving, that arm strength just isn't there, and he tries to fit the ball in where it just, it's not going to fit. So when you talk about the next Brock Purdy, one of the things that, you know, when you talk about Sam Hartman, look, Brock Purdy was a career just under 68% completion percentage, 81 touchdowns, 33 interceptions. Okay, never threw more than 7 interceptions in a season. And with Purdy, also, you know, pretty athletic, over 1,100 yards on the ground, 19 touchdowns. But, you know, he wasn't all about, you know, the physicality and everything. It was, you know, just, hey, he was a smart kid, heady leader. He and Matt Campbell really took the Iowa State program to new heights, right? Is there a guy that can potentially fit that Brock Purdy mold? Well, you know, one guy that I take a look at is Austin Reed out of Western Kentucky, right? 6'1", 220 pounds, at Southern Illinois. Look, you know, 13-1 as a starter, over 4,000 yards and 40 touchdowns, Division II National Championship in 2019. Pandemic, all those issues, ends up at Western Kentucky, ends up throwing for over 8,000 yards and 71 touchdowns, you know, as well. So when you think about Austin Reed, I think this is a guy that can find his way into, you know, that the fifth, sixth round range. Is he, you know, a Bailey Zappe type that could end up finding himself coming off the board in round number 4? I think it's possible, but I think Bailey Zappe actually has a better arm than Reed. You know, Reed, especially when you watch the deep ball, it kind of hangs up a little bit. But, you know, let's look at the numbers. Bailey Zappe in his only year there at Western Kentucky, 69% completion percentage, over 5,900 yards, 62 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. Okay. Austin Reed over the last 2 years, over 8,000 yards, 63.2% completion percentage, 71 touchdowns, 22 interceptions. Has a little bit of an edge with over 300 yards on the ground, 12 touchdowns. You know, I thought from an athleticism standpoint, you know, Austin Reed, he's serviceable. You know, I think the arm strength, you know, it's okay. But again, when he's throwing the ball deep down the field, that's where he can get himself into trouble. You put him under pressure. I just don't know how he's going to live up to that. But look, this is a guy that took Southern Illinois. He was 13-1 as a starter there. Goes to Western Kentucky, doesn't have quite that same success, but this is a guy that I think physical limitations to me doesn't say fourth round. But when we look at round number five, again, you know, mentioned that, you know, we're looking at right around 1.5 to 2, you know, quarterbacks taken, right? In the last 3 years, last 5 years, you know, we saw four come off the board in 2023. Like I said, you know, we're not going to see that happen again, but 1 to 2, sure. You know, we could potentially see Austin Reed. That could be Joe Milton. I think Jordan Travis will probably fall. I think he'll end up probably in that sixth round range. And look, you know, you're talking about just one quarterback taken in the sixth round. We didn't see any in 2022. 2019, we saw two taken in round number six. And then really in round number seven, the last 3 years, just a little over one in terms of the average. None in 2021. But then, you know, we saw three in 2022. Again, a weak quarterback draft class. Brock Purdy taken as Mr. Irrelevant. But, you know, the quarterback class there, they're really kind of drawing, you know, trying to pull for something there. And I think, you know, the quarterback run, we saw quarterbacks probably taken before they should have been, you know, round five, round six. So I think when we look at this group, Jordan Travis, possibly sixth or seventh round. Austin Reed, possibly in that fifth, sixth, seventh round range. Devin Leary is one that a team could take a flyer on there in sixth or seventh round. Then you get to Keaton Slovis out of BYU. 6'2", 223 pounds. Look, this guy, I mean, the athleticism that we saw at the combine was impressive. You know, runs that 4.5, 5.40. I don't think anybody really was expecting to see that out of Keaton Slovis. But I'll be perfectly honest with you. When I watched Keaton Slovis play, you know, it was his third team there at BYU. And I just don't see the same quarterback that he was at USC as a freshman. You know, just under 72% completion percentage, over 3,500 yards, 30 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, which, you know, I mean, he was gambling a bit with some of his throws. But that Holiday Bowl, where the Trojans lost 49-24 against Iowa, he took a hit to that shoulder by A.J. Epenesa. And I don't think that arm was ever the same. You know, I think Slovis has always argued that that's never been the case, but I just haven't seen the same arm strength. You know, we saw his completion percentage drop each and every year since. We saw, you know, the yardage. He could never match the yardage, but also, you know, he could never really quite stay on the field. Concussions were a major issue for Keaton Slovis, so obviously the medicals are a huge concern. Pitt just wasn't a great fit. You know, 10 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. BYU, I thought he looked better overall, but again, the completion percentage was on the low side, just 57.5%. And when you look at USC and the success that he had, over 68% completion percentage. After that, you're talking about 58.4 at Pitt, 57.5 at BYU. I just don't see there really being any shot for Keaton Slovis at this point, really of being drafted. I worry about the concussions, you know, concussion history, you know, the mobility. Just, you know, I'm surprised with that straight line speed that he showed off, because, you know, he really struggled with mobility in the pocket, and that arm strength just isn't there. And so that's really what I worry about. You know, that arm, I think there was more damage. There's more issues with that shoulder than I think he was really letting on. And so I think, you know, teams, you know, it's kind of buyer beware with Keaton Slovis right now. You know, and again, I don't know for sure. It looks like that. This guy was humming along as a true freshman. Look, you know, he came in and, you know, coached by Kurt Warner. And when JT Daniels went down to the ACL tear, first game against Fresno State, Slovis came in and put together an impressive freshman year. But he just didn't look like the same quarterback after that. And so obviously when you look at Slovis, I just don't see him coming off the board. So I think really when we're looking at it, you know, we know what we have in the first three rounds of the draft. So that would give us, you know, again, Williams, Daniels, McCarthy, May, Penix probably in round one, Bo Nix in round two, Spencer Rattler in round three. Michael Pratt, round four, I think, you know, feels comfortable there. After that, you're looking at Joe Milton, Austin Reed possibly in round five, Jordan Travis, that leg, I mean, that's the big question mark there with the medicals. I think either sixth or seventh round there. Devin Leary, the same. Sam Hartman. I don't know. You know, teams may take a flyer on him because of the leadership ability and everything. I just don't see enough arm talent there. Not enough athleticism. Decision-making has been questionable with him as well. So I just don't know if that's going to happen. So we end up with 12. Just kind of through this little exercise. And again, it's by the numbers. So yeah, I'm not talking too much about anything else other than just looking at numbers. So it's kind of fun to just play the numbers, not really look at anything else. Look, I mean, that's what they do a lot of times with analytics, right? I'm just doing it a little bit differently. So when you look at 12, you know, you look at the total numbers. 2023, we have 14. Down year in 2022 with just 9. 2021, we thought we had, you know, the strength there at the top of the draft. Ended up with 10 overall. We know what happened with that draft class. You know, 5 taken in round number 1 in the top 15 picks. I mean, you think about that, though, just for a second. You know, the 49ers got lucky getting Brock Purdy the next year at Mr. Irrelevant. You know, had they been stuck with Trey Lance, you know, where would that franchise have been? You know, they got lucky. The Jets, Zach Wilson, obviously that's been a bust. They had to bring in Aaron Rodgers, improvise there. You know, you look at the Patriots, had to finally move on from Mac Jones. They're, again, looking for a quarterback just a couple of years later. Same thing with the Bears and Justin Fields. So 5 quarterbacks in round 1 could be a very, you know, very big stretch. So you look at this group, does it make sense to pull the trigger? Are there question marks with some of these quarterbacks? I'm just saying, Michael Penix Jr., the injury history, 2 AC joint issues, 2 ACL tears at Indiana. Yes, he hasn't gotten injured at Washington, and yes, he showed up at his pro day, showed off the athleticism to say, hey, my knee is 100%. Look at me out here. I ran a sub 4.640. I showcased a vertical leap of 36 inches, but the history, you can't ignore that. And then you also look at the arm strength. Yes, the arm strength is phenomenal, but short to intermediate throws, he struggles. He struggles with the touch, those touch throws. He also, you know, he struggles when he's on the move. It's really weird. You see the athleticism, but as he gets outside the pocket, you know, if he doesn't get a chance to reset his feet, I think the arms, the elasticity with that arm, his inability to make throws on the run, really weird. So maybe you don't go Michael Penix Jr. there. Bo Nix, I think, to me, the more and more I think about it, probably going to be a second rounder. So I got sidetracked. 2020, we had 13 quarterbacks taken. And again, you know, Burrow, Tua, Herbert, Love, Hurts, you know, those 5 guys sitting at the top of that draft class. Pretty impressive stuff. But then there were 8 quarterbacks taken after that. And you know, none have really been much of a factor at the next level. 2019, we saw 11 quarterbacks taken. That's the year again. Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, you know, Gardner Minshew in round number 6, saw him come off the board as well. So 12, hey, you know, that's the, you know, the third highest in the last, would be the third highest in the last 6 years. And I think it'll be interesting to see just how many of those guys that we're talking about day 3 actually do get drafted. I worry again about Jordan Travis's leg, Sam Hartman, the injury history with Keaton Slovis. So that's kind of how I see things shaking out when we talk about the quarterback position, just playing by the numbers. When we talk about the first round, Caleb Williams, I think it's a lock that he's going to be the number 1 overall pick going to the Chicago Bears. Caleb Williams, to me, this guy, it makes perfect sense. You watch the leadership with this guy. Everything teammates say about him, I haven't found a bad thing that teammates have actually said. This is a guy that, look, when he won the Heisman Trophy, flew his offensive line out there to be there with him. When he threw out the first pitch at the Dodger game, who was there? His offensive line. A guy, look, you're very smart and intelligent. You watch what he's able to do. Two big concerns that you have with a top prospect. How do they handle pressure? And then also, how do they handle money? Well, guess what? The first one, the second question is really easy. This guy made $10 million in NIL money since he went to USC. We see the type of guy that he is. He's still showing up, supporting the USC programs. He hasn't gotten himself into any trouble. You know, he's used to having that money already. That contract is not going to overwhelm him in any way. Pressure. USC. You move on from Oklahoma. Obviously, you know, the pressure there to respond. We saw what he did in 2022. You know, really willing that program to nearly a playoff berth. And had it not been for the hamstring injury there against Utah, they were trending in the right direction. They were actually on their way to beating Utah because they couldn't stop Caleb Williams. Teams then went back to the well, tried to figure out ways to stop Caleb Williams. And look, you know, it's one of those things to where, yes, you know, teams tried to cover the guys up front and force Caleb to come off those primary receivers, really get him outside and making some plays with his legs, which, you know, we know he can absolutely do that. But the hero ball rubs people a lot of people the wrong way. But look, when you've got a historically bad defense, historically bad there at USC, I mean, you know, if Caleb Williams did not score, if that offense did not score, then Caleb knew that SC was likely going to lose. And that's really what happened. A lot of the games where USC either should have won going away, or, you know, they lost when they should have won, that defense let them down in a big way. Plus, he had an offensive line that was not blocking for him. And yes, there were some plays where he may have ran himself into more pressure than he really needed to. But this dude was Houdini in the backfield. And his ability still, that Washington game where, you know, he's pressured and he spins around, able to still get those eyes up, making the throw to the left side of the field, opposite side, you know, to the far side, to the end zone. He set his feet, fires, quick strike from 25 yards out, hits the receiver in the end zone for the touchdown. Just that ability, split second, finds the guy, hits him, touchdown. You know, we see plenty of plays where he gets outside the pocket, the incredible torque that he puts on the football as well. There's no question there. The big question mark is can he play within the confines of an offense? I've said that before with Patrick Mahomes. You know, the downside, you talk about Johnny Manziel, things like that. I don't want to go there with Caleb because he has shown to play within the confines of an offense. You look at that UCLA game. There are plenty of times where he was in that pocket and he was taking what the defense was giving him. Again, though, he had the defense, what the defense was giving him. He's shown that he can do that. But look, again, what did USC have? He had a porous offensive line, had a historically bad defense. Do you take what the defense is giving you, or do you look to try to make a big play? I got to make the big play because guess what? I got to get down the field. We got to score. Otherwise, we put the defense back on the field, and guess what? They're going to get scored upon. So I think that pressure, that really what was the biggest issue. His pressure in the pocket, we know what he can do, big playmaker. I think the biggest thing really for me that I worry about with Caleb Williams is that accuracy outside the numbers from within the pocket. He can hit the targets down the middle of the field, no problem. Once you ask him to throw, especially to that, you know, that deep ball outside the numbers, struggles with that accuracy. That's something I think he really needs to shorten up for sure. But everyone talks about, you know, the drop in his play at USC in 2023. He actually had a better completion percentage and had the same number of picks, yet everybody wants to – really, the quarterback rating was also higher. 168.5 in 2022, 170.1 in 2023. Five interceptions. Three of them were in one game against Notre Dame where he was pressing, really trying to make a play. And you look at it to – couple of those throws, I think he rushed it a little bit. He was trying to do a little bit too much rather than just take what the defense was giving him. Again, you know, feeling that pressure. But it was also early on in the game. And I think it was really one of those things that snowballed for him because, look, the defense already proved that they couldn't stop Notre Dame on a short field. So he was really trying to make a play. Notre Dame shutting down that receiver core really couldn't separate for him. And I think that's where it got him into trouble. One game, 60% of his interceptions, and yet everyone talks about Caleb Williams having such a poor year. His decision-making was poor across the board. I just don't see it. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. That's why I've got Caleb Williams number one going away. Jaden Daniels there at LSU, I think ultimately he makes the most sense for Cliff Kingsbury. You know, you look at who he's coached before. You know, his last quarterback in the NFL was Kyler Murray, dual threat quarterback. You look at Caleb Williams, he was, you know, the quarter offensive assistant. I don't think he was the quarterback coach there at USC with Caleb Williams. You look at Jaden Daniels and the season that he had, the Heisman Trophy winning season. This guy, 35 of his 40 touchdowns were made from within the pocket. His pocket presence, very smooth, calm under pressure. When this guy does look to vacate the pocket, he's not really doing so looking to make a play. So that's the thing that I wonder. You know, can he truly manipulate the pocket on a consistent basis rather than look to run? Because look, this guy, he doesn't like to slide. He's looking for contact. He's a smaller guy. I mean, even though he's bulked up to 6'4", 210, you look at his frame, it's more of a wiry frame. And so you worry about that. But man, this was a career year. Completion percentage jumped by almost 4 points to 72.2, over 3,800 yards, 40 touchdowns to just 4 interceptions. And look, on the ground, over 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns. He's dynamic in the open field, sets guys up, the all-out speed, just running away from defenders. I look at him and the deep ball outside of Michael Penix Jr., best deep ball in the class. And again, this is a guy that was throwing to Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., who are both going to be top 15 picks, top 20 at the very least. Because look, Brian Thomas Jr. could go to the Saints at number 14. I think the floor for him right now is probably 18 to the Bengals. I think that's really where I see Brian Thomas going. Look, Malik Nabers, I think either 4 to the Cardinals, 5 to the Chargers if they don't trade down, 6 to the Giants. Those make a lot of sense for Malik Nabers right now. He's a top 10 pick, no doubt about it. But I think when you look at Jaden Daniels, look, he started his career at Arizona State. Consistency was a big issue for him, especially when you look at 2021, 10 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. He wasn't playing on a very tough ASU squad. Getting into the SEC, we really saw his game flourish, and that's what I'm looking forward to seeing him do there with the Commanders. The next question is who is it? Is it Drake May or is it J.J. McCarthy? I ultimately look at the Patriots, right? And Patriot fans, Michigan quarterback, I think it just makes a lot of sense to put J.J. McCarthy there. Now, this is a guy, look, again, you took the ball out of his hands, and because you're a run-first offense. When he was asked to make a play, you look at it, over 2,900 yards through the air, 9 yards per pass attempt, 22 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and we saw the athleticism. This was a guy that when he did decide to pull and take off and run, he could run away from defenders. And we saw him in the short shuttle and the 3-cone drill. Very, very athletic, explosive. And this is a guy, again, you get him outside the pocket, I think he does a good job keeping those eyes down the field, looking to still make a play. He'll take some risks, take some chances. He'll throw across his body late over the middle. Needs to watch with that. He'll telegraph some throws as well. Again, playmaker, a guy that understands where to go with the football, really understood his role there at Michigan. And I thought that was something that was really important. I look at the Patriots. I look at Jerod Mayo looking to make a statement. Alex Van Pelt, I think, will work well with either Drake May or J.J. McCarthy. I think the arrow is pointing up for J.J. McCarthy. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think that's ultimately where he's going to go, is to the Patriots. In which case, you look at Minnesota and Drake May. And the reason why I think Minnesota makes a whole lot of sense, obviously, is you've got Josh McCown at the Vikings, as the quarterback coach, right? And McCown actually coached May at the high school level. So you already have that connection. So if you can continue to build upon that, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, Kevin O'Connell, the head coach, you know, he's an athletic guy, right? I mean, you saw him, you know, a guy that runs sub 4.6, I want to say, at the combine, very athletic guy. You know, JJ McCarthy could potentially be on their mind, but I look at Josh McCown. He knows what he's getting with Drake May. He knows the type of kid that he's getting. And look, you know, Drake May, he's done everything right, and you know, teams are still, there's all these question marks that are popping up. And look, 65% completion percentage, 63 touchdowns, just 16 interceptions. You know, guy that also went for over 1,200 yards on the ground and 16 touchdowns with the Tar Heels. And look, you know, he lost Josh Downs, so obviously, you know, some of that production, you know, he didn't have Devontae Walker to start out the season. Receiving core, lots of drops, a lot of just losing the ball, the concentration. The receivers didn't help him. Offensive line was also pretty porous as well. But Drake May makes a lot of things look easy. He fits the ball into the tight windows with ease. You see the arm strength, the ability to make the throws to all three levels of the field. He doesn't really struggle with the short to intermediate touch throws. Putting the ball over the linebacker in front of the safety, not an issue with Drake May. And you know, he's a guy like Caleb Williams, again, dropping the arm angles, that's what kind of gets some of those comparisons to Patrick Mahomes, because he can drop and basically make just about any throw, any type of an arm angle, whether it's a complete submarine sidearm straight over the top. You know, you're going to see everything in between to try to throw around a defender. I think Drake May can do some of that. I think, you know, Jaden Daniels, we've seen, JJ McCarthy. So, you know, you're talking about a big quarterback, big physical guy, could take a pounding in the pocket. There's no doubt about that. 6'4", 223 pounds, and I think ultimately Minnesota, you know, look, I think Minnesota could possibly even stay at 11 and still get Drake May. You know, my mock drafts, I don't pick any type of trades. I still have a quarterback dropping. Right now it shows JJ McCarthy on the website, on readyforthedraft.com, but that's going to change. It'll be Drake May. And again, I think about decisions that I've made previously with adjusting quarterbacks. There could be a lot of smoke with JJ McCarthy and where he's going, where he's coming off the board. Could it be this year's Will Levis? I mean, it's entirely possible, especially, you know, look, you know, Jim Harbaugh pounding the table for his quarterback, saying that, hey, he should be the number one quarterback taken. But I think the reason why everyone's been late to the JJ McCarthy party is everyone, you know, needed to look at the game film, because look, you know, the impact, it's a lot easier to judge the impact of Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, not as much with JJ McCarthy, because that offensive line and the running game, that was really what was a showcase. You put JJ McCarthy on some of those other teams, you know, maybe we're having that same conversation where it's easy for us to point out what he's done, right? So I think those are your quarterbacks that you're going to see come off the board in round number one. Again, we've already talked about Penix. We've talked about Nix. I think Penix, I look at the Raiders. I think the Raiders, you know, at 13, could they go quarterback? That feels way too high. Could they trade down? I'm looking at a team like Buffalo. Buffalo could be interested in Brian Thomas. I don't think they're going to try to get into the top 10. I think, you know, that's to try to get that number one. But look, when you lose Stephon Diggs, you're going to need a number one wideout. Maybe you target Brian Thomas Jr. Maybe you trade with the Raiders there. Then maybe the Raiders then look from that number 28 overall pick, trade back up a few picks to end up getting Michael Penix Jr. Make sure Denver does not get that guy. That's really the biggest thing. Because Denver, Sean Payton, what does he do? Sean Payton's not going to reach for a quarterback. So I don't think he's going to take Michael Penix Jr. high. I think if anything, you know, he's either going to trade down to end up getting a quarterback, or they trade back into round one. But again, he's not going to gamble. So the likelihood of that happening, I actually think, you know, the guy that they're going to target will be Bo Nix in round number two. You know, to battle with Jarrett Stidham. I think that makes the most sense right now. So it'll be interesting to see, though, how it plays out, how many teams are jockeying for position. You know, the Cardinals look mighty awesome for it. There are a lot of holes there on that roster. They already have pick number 27. They could trade down again out of that number 4 pick. Hey, they traded down a couple of picks before and got Paris Johnson. I think it's entirely possible you could see them trade with Minnesota. I think the Chargers at 5, though, makes the most sense, and here's why. Chargers at 5, they could get their wide receiver, but at 11, there's still a chance, especially if we see all these quarterbacks coming off the board in the top 10, still a chance that Romo Dunze falls to 11. But even if that doesn't happen, if Jim Harbaugh, look, he already has Will Disley and Hayden Hurst on the roster, but he could go Brock Bowers, or he can go offensive line, either take Taliese Fuaga, J.C. Latham, and then get a receiver at number 23 overall. Or even an offensive lineman if he goes with Brock Bowers at 11. You know, potentially a guy like Tyler Guyton at number 23. So that makes a lot of sense with Minnesota. But again, Minnesota just wants to stay patient, stay put. I just don't know that they can. I don't know Drake May, if that's going to be their guy, if Josh McCown is pounding the table for him, I think they're going to do everything in their power to try to move up. That's already why they got that 23 pick. And they're looking to get that quarterback that they need, and they've got that draft capital. You know, how many other teams, if we get past that top 5 and Minnesota hasn't traded up, I think you look at the rest of those teams, there is enough of a need for all of those teams to stay where they're at. Maybe Chicago at 9. That might be where you're able to make that move and get a quarterback. Romo Dunze to the Jets at 10. Just saying, that could potentially happen. In which case, then you end up seeing the Bears at 11. Could end up taking Jared Verse to team with Montez Sweat. But again, I digress. We've been talking about the quarterbacks, and you know, you could just sit there and start picking apart a lot of these trades. What makes the most sense? Where are these quarterbacks going to be coming off the board? You know, round 1, round 2, I think we have that set. Then it really starts to get a little bit murky after Spencer Rattler. So that's been by the numbers with the quarterbacks. I think, you know, really, you know, we've had that average of about 11 quarterbacks taken over the last 3 to 5 years. I think we end up going one higher. We're going to go 12 at the most with this group, but I still see 12 being realistic. I think if Jordan Travis, the medicals, there's concern there with the leg, he may be the odd man out in that group, which would take us to 11, but I really think that we're looking at 12 when it's all said and done. So that's really the quarterback spot. We're going to go ahead and put an end to this podcast. We'll do the same thing with the running back group. We've got a lot to talk about there. A couple of running backs taken in round 1 in 2023. We saw that again in 2021. We're not going to see it. Look, just like 2022, where we didn't see a running back taken in round 1, not going to happen again. But what's interesting is when you look over the last 5 years, the number of running backs taken in the first 2 rounds, it'll surprise you. I think you'll end up seeing at least a couple of running backs, even in this year's draft class, where people are saying that, hey, it's a down year for the running back class overall. We're going to see a couple running backs taken in the first 2 days. Not on round 1. That won't happen. But on in round number 2, Jonathan Brooks, Trey Benson, now we're talking. I think that could potentially happen. But we'll take a look at just how many running backs do we think will actually come off the board in the second and third round. Is that the sweet spot? No. Sweet spot's really going to be in that third to fifth round range. We'll start talking about that and guys that'll end up being more of those depth players that we're going to be seeing coming off the board in the mid to late day 3 range. So a lot to play with there with the running backs. We'll get into that here in the next day or two. So until next time, everyone, for readyforthedraft.com, this has been the Ready for the Draft podcast. I've been your host, Greg Schutz. Take care, everyone. Enjoy your week. The countdown to the draft is on. And until next time, I am out of here.